Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. Wait, so explain this to me. There's stuff growing in the bottle?
Well, I wouldn't say even growing.
What would you say then?
There's life.
It's what?
It's like life in Pluto. You know,
it's life on Pluto. Yeah, I don't understand. What does that even mean?
Well, that it is inside the water in the, you know, like in the moon. They found a few bacteria. They don't know if it's dangerous, what it is doing.
How do they not know if it's dangerous or not?
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt, guys. Your lovely discussion is amazing. I just found out that apparently we're on the 150th episode. So
no,
what?
No.
Yeah.
150. Yeah. We gotta do something. We need to celebrate.
I just cracked a beer.
that does not seem like celebration enough unless you can pass that around, Chava. Not with my gluten intolerance. Suddenly, this sound booth will not be a pretty sound booth. But I've got three ideas for how we could celebrate this 150th episode.
Okay. As long as I don't have to see you dancing, Lou, I'm in.
So my first idea is, right, like, we never get to hear Roy's voice. This is a special thing in and of itself, right?
Yes.
So I think what we do is we have Roy re-record the entire episode, right, with his voice over our voices.
Hard pass.
No.
What do you think? You guys like that?
No, hard pass. Okay, next idea.
So a second idea is we make life really, really hard for Roy, and we make him do the entire episode where I'm Quetzalcoatl, right? And you're Ahalotl.
Okay, so you get to be a god, and I
get to be a little creature that lives under the water?
You're a little creature. You're like the monster. You're the water monster.
Yeah, a tiny water monster. No, I'm not. I'm not.
You're just tiny but powerful. No, it's not going to work for you?
Not if you're being Quetzalcoatl. If you get to be a little ant, and I get to be an Ahalotl, I'll play. But otherwise, yeah, I'm not buying on to that.
Either way, sounds awful. A ton of work.
Yeah, a ton of work. Okay, so third idea,
okay.
We play the entire theme song.
Yeah, sure.
That has never happened.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Okay, take it away!
Na, 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 na. Two dudes named Lou and Chava. In a car not built for back roads. Travel back roads never meant for cars. Their singular objective is to learn about agave. Bring the knowledge back to gringo bars. Abba dabba 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 dibidi boom de boom. Hang up a road trip. Abba dabba 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 dibidi boom de boom. Hang up a road trip.
I'm Lou Bank.
I am Chopity One.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Greek ex-bartenders better understand agave spirits in rural Mexico.
And today we're talking about one of the big misconceptions within agave.
Whoa, wow. You just came out of the gate with an argument.
Of course I did.
Okay, so tell me, young Chava, what is this biggest misconception?
Well, and I'm not going to say it's a generalized misconception, but it's something that I think that we are definitely guilty of spreading. How many times have we been in a presentation and have we talked about Capon agave, or have we talked about these agaves that grow on the slope of mountains in extremely isolated, difficult areas and have said, oh, this agave is going to taste like heaven because it grew under very difficult conditions. Because things that take a lot of hard work to grow will always taste better.
I'm not sure that I've ever said that. Now,
you have. Yeah.
Well, I don't think I have. I think there's a nuance to it that maybe you're not catching or you're misremembering.
Okay.
And the nuance would be, you can take the most amazing base ingredient, and in the hands of somebody whose palate doesn't match mine, it's not going to create a spirit that he or she is not going to create a spirit that I enjoy. Now, having said that, I would agree with you that we tend to talk about how the agaves that are struggling to reach maturity, that are living in difficult places and climates, really, right? That they will tend to produce something that in the right hands will be something that I find, a spirit that I find more delicious.
Okay, and I guess that is even the whole basis of the wild agave versus cultivated agave. That's when somebody gets a bottle that says wild agave, they get extremely excited because I believe that there is, even if it's not like said in the open, or it's not, the bottle doesn't say this is going to taste better, definitely the concept of wild agave tends to suggest that this is going to be a more vibrant, more interesting flavor that has more information than a domesticated cultivated agave. Do we agree with that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's absolutely a market perception. And I don't even know that I would necessarily disagree with it.
Exactly. So do we have any evidence that will support that?
Do we have any evidence that will support it?
Is there any study?
Well, the problem is when you're talking about a study, you're coming back to the idea that individual people are deciding this is more delicious or that is less delicious. And I don't know how you study that.
Exactly.
I guess if you did like a bunch of blind taste tests.
No. Forget that. So that's why we have a beautiful quote by one of our best friends lately.
What's his name?
Dr. Pulque. Huh?
Dr. Pulque. Gonzalo,
yes. Gonzalo, it's an academic at the University of Morelia, UNAM in Morelia. And he was smart enough to convince a bunch of people to make his master's thesis on pulque. And this is a quote that I got from him when I interviewed him lengthily about this. So here it goes. There are many differences that the producers can catch. For example, with their own productions, they use different agaves like chacaleño, negro, and manso. They know very well that the manso produces a guamiel that is way sweeter and more delicious. And this notion of deliciousness is usually linked to how sweet the aguamiel is. They know this empirically, but we have tried to systematize this knowledge by measuring the sugar's content. Still, to this day, we have insufficient data to know if there is a clear pattern that is either linked to the type of agave or the land where it is growing. This is something that has been explored a lot in mezcal. It is a popular idea that an agave that grew in a more complicated area or a poorer soil will yield a better mezcal. But it seems like in pulque, it could be the reverse. The agaves that have been watered and pampered the most can maybe yield a higher quality sap. For example, agaves broncos and cimarrones de monte, which are wild agaves that grow on cliffs, are known to produce tasteless and minimal aguamiel.
Los magueyes cimarrones de monte dan poquita aguamiel y dicen que es medio desabrida.
Okay, so you see how this has nothing to do with sit a bunch of gringos and do some blind tastings.
Yes and no. I mean, even Gonzalo says there's insufficient data and suggests that, and this is the piece that actually confused me that I was referring to before we started recording, even suggests that the better pulque is the sweeter pulque.
And I love that. Yeah, go.
Okay, so my point is simply that's just not, well, I shouldn't say it's not, but certainly for my palate, it's not the case with agave spirits.
Well, and this is very interesting because what a sweeter agave, and we see this a lot in the field, right? You're talking with maestros, and when you're talking about yield or you're talking about how good is this year going to be or how good is this batch going to be, a very usual response that I get is like, se ve que está dulce, like se ve que tiene dulce, which means like there's sweetness attached to this agave. And that usually means, that means you're going to have a better yield and that is going to be a more fortunate batch. So
well,
in the taste
well,
of pulque.
Hang on, you're conflating those two things, bro.
Tell me, yeah.
Yeah. So fortunate in terms of maybe production levels, but not in terms of flavor, right? Because yield is not the same as flavor.
Well,
if it were, right, like Blue Weber would be the thing.
Well, this is interesting to me because, again, like in the case of pulque, you have a direct link between the amount of sugar in the agave and the sweetness in the final product, right? That is not the case with a spirit. You can have an extremely sweet mosto, you can have an extremely sweet mix of fibers and juices, and the final product can be really, really far away from being sweet depending how you ferment it and how you distill that. So yeah, sure. Basically, in the distillation world, to have a sweeter agave, if you have a very sweet Extero Amarillo, that just means that you're going to have more area to work with, more alcohol to work with.
Right. Yeah, so, totally agree with that. But that, to me, is different than quality, right?
Well, it depends. Because as you're saying, and I agree with you, then everybody will just work with Espadín. But I believe that if you have other things, or tequila, whatever, but if within the realm of Extero Amarillo, and I think a wonderful example is the 3-year Capón that Tomás and Lorenzo used to make their batch of 2022, if I'm not mistaken, of Extero Amarillo. That has been one of the most delicious things I've ever tried in my life. And they specifically, when I was talking to them, was like, yeah, that was a very beautifully sweet agave. So I guess like here is like, and again, like I don't even want to get too much in the rabbit hole of that right now, which we already
all we
are.
Ever did was, yes, yeah. Yes.
But I think what I love about this is, again, like we have somebody that studies this in a more organized way than we do, which is Gonzalo. And he is confounded about this idea of, okay, which is the better environment for agaves to do what? And I agree with you. More yield doesn't mean, or more sugars in the agave doesn't mean necessarily, it's not a marker for better flavor. But I believe that there's not a lot of understanding of how different environments of different ways of pampering or not pampering the agave actually affected. And I think it has become a popular idea that we keep on repeating because I think it's a very romantic idea, right? This thing that grew up out in the wilderness, of course, is going to have more vibrant flavors. That's like a logical idea that I think people love to repeat. It is a lot less romantic what Gonzalo is telling us in the case of pulque, which is a better pampered agave is going to produce a better result. And again, with their own criteria, with their own understanding. But the only thing that I want to suggest is that both things can be possible. It's just we don't know.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and that could be the subtitle to the series is we don't know. But you know, here's a theory, Chava, is when you're drinking pulque, you are drinking the fermented aguamiel, which is just literally the sugar extract, the liquid sugar extract from the agave.
Sup.
as compared to when you've cooked the entire agave and then shredded it, you're throwing all of those elements in. So, you know, my head goes back to the conversation with Dr. Ivan Saldana, where he was talking
Saldana.
Sure, that guy too. When he was talking about all of these elements that make up the agave's biodefense mechanisms, and that those all end up in the fermenter, whereas they're not necessarily in that sap that you're using to make your pulque. And I wonder if that's the difference.
I'm not, like, the only reason why I wouldn't buy that notion is because we have amazing examples like Campanilla or Villasuso, where they are fermenting without fibers, and the product is still extremely rich in flavor.
Yeah, but it's the elements aren't just the fiber, right? Well, you're cooking the agave, and then you're squeezing all that juice out, and the juice is coming from every corner of the plant, in the case of Campanilla, whereas with the agave that you're using to harvest the aguamiel, it's literally extracting it itself. It's choosing what goes into
it is extremely similar. I think that all the information in terms of all these biochemical defenses that the agave has that can inflict or can influence flavor are definitely present in the aguamiel. Because they're all part of the same system. Like for me, it's interesting what you are saying in the sense, like, why do you think the aguamiel chooses? Like, which is a discriminatory process? Like, how exactly do you foresee that happening within the agave?
Okay, so we know that in order for there to be sugars that we can consume, right, you have to have hydrolyzation. And the hydrolyzation, when it takes place in the plant itself as opposed to being done through cooking, it's going to be done through the enzymes in the plant. So it seems to me like you've got the enzymes that are hitting these potential sugars and making that conversion. And that's what's really going in the base of the agave, not all the other elements.
No. I fully disagree with that. I think the complexities in terms of how much can the agave elements influence the aguamiel and the mezcal, I think they're tremendously similar. And I don't quite think that... I'm really struggling. I'm really squeezing my brain to trying to find a way in which why wouldn't that be the case? I would even say, and never quote me on this, that but the aguamiel
he said being recorded.
Yeah, I know. But I would even say the aguamiel has even more of this biochemical presence of these defenses, just because it's inside the green plant. So it is having contact with a lot of these things out in the wild. You know, like it's even, they're covering it with a penca. You know, like when they're allowing for it to build, there's a penca on top of that. And some of that, I'm sure, that throws it, gets into the aguamiel. I think, like, honestly, for me, this episode and what I would like to sort of point out, it's like, again, there is this term, wild agave, used as a marker of a more delicious agave, because supposedly the conditions in which it grew will be mm-hmm. conducive to more vibrant flavors. And I don't think there is a lot of information out there to actually confirm this. And I will say this just because I would love for somebody to actually come up with some ideas about this. And I believe there has to be even a follow-up of this episode of, okay, so if we are saying that, why, right? What are these elements of the wild agave that are giving it other things? Or if it has to be like, maybe, and this is what gets me really excited, maybe the sweet spot is half wild. Just wild.
Half.
Yeah,
wild.
Like just like give it a little bit of pampering. Just a tiny exact, just, you know, not a lot. Just like, just caress it on the forehead every 3-5 years. And maybe that love will take it a long way.
Fuck. These boys, they're just in a cockfight. This is hardly the first cockfight I've had to break up. This is Henrietta, and I'm here to say, hey, I think we should just do what Chava said and just follow right up on this episode. But why wait until another episode? So I contacted Dr. Ivan Saldana and asked him the question. I sent him an email and asked him the question about the difference in the sugar productions for the pulque and the mezcal. And he actually had something that makes sense to say. So take it away, Ivan.
The first thing is that, yes, plants that tend to live in more harsh conditions develop a chemistry to protect itself, but it's not necessarily related with sugars, but to other components like essential oils, terpenes, for instance, or the generation of fat, of guax. Plants that are like in very harsh sun and no shadow, they become grayish and a thicker layer of guax is actually formed. So in the case of agaves that are used for mezcal, in which you have a process of cooking and grinding and like homogenizing everything, including proteins and fibers and everything that are in the process of production. I mean, depends, of course, in tequila, some will take the fibers away, but in mezcal, you will keep them. You are obtaining the flavors from these conditions of the plants, but also always remember you are caramelizing the sugars. When you break them down, you produce caramel, and that creates a lot of flavor. On the other hand, in pulque is a different thing. Pulque is a sugar that is secreted in order to heal a wound that was performed by the maestro pulquero, who is hurting the plants in the dawn and dusk and then collecting the aguamiel that, as you correctly said in your email, is produced by the natural hydrolysis, the enzymes that the plant contains produce, and will try to flood the wound with such a rich and nutritious liquid in order to feed the cells around the wound and close it. That's why the sap is being accumulated for pulque production. I mean, it's difficult to say that the stress will be responsible for flavor, and with all honesty, I am not sure in pulque how that actually happens. But what I can tell you is that if you don't have a healthy, well-watered plant, or a plant that has a good shape, good succulence, it's going to be very hard to actually collect pulque out of the plant. You at the end, you are not only getting sugars in the case of pulque, but the plant has to do an entire work to move resources such as water, with the sugars, of course, in order to flood this wound. So I would say that, yes, you will need more healthy plants.
Well, there you go. That's somebody who should probably have a podcast instead of these two goofballs. Anyway, thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next episode of Agave Road Trip.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periván. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.